And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 5 minutes past nine on Thursday, the 9th of May, 2024. How are you all keeping out there? I hope you're very well across the Northwest and wherever you happen to be listening or watching us from. It's fantastic to have you with us for this Thursday's 9 till noon show. And as usual, it's the mixed bag of conversation, news and features. Later on, we'll be talking history with Dr. Joe as well. I know that's a very popular feature with many of you out there, so stick around for that and so much more besides. Get in contact with us with the usual by the usual means, texting and WhatsApping to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or you can give us a call on 07491 25000. It's great to hear from you and it guides us in the directions that we go. It's also just great to hear your opinions. And if you want to email us, it's comments@highlandradio.com. Okay, Thursday morning, always a busy one for newspapers. We'll start today with the Donegal News. And a 73-year-old former parish priest has been sentenced to 4 years imprisonment for the repeated sexual abuse of a young boy over a period of 6 years. Eamon Crossan, a native of Letterkenny, pleaded guilty to 7 counts of sexual abuse and 2 counts of sexual abuse, representative of a total of 52 counts. A null prosecute was entered by the state in relation to 44 further counts. The accused appeared at Letterkenny Circuit Court by video link yesterday from the Midlands prison, where he has been in custody since August 4th, 2022. The offences related to dates at a number of locations in the county in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Now, the diocese has reissued an apology after the former Raphoe priest was sentenced. Former Donegal priest Eamon Crossan from Letterkenny was sentenced yesterday for crimes committed against a minor. Crossan, a former priest of the Diocese of Raphoe, appeared at Letterkenny Circuit Court via video link yesterday, where a 5-year sentence was imposed on him. In the wake of the sentencing, Monsignor Kevin Gillespie reiterated an apology on behalf of the Raphoe Diocese. In a statement yesterday, Monsignor Gillespie said, "On behalf of the diocese and with a deep sense of shame for his actions, I sincerely reiterate my apology to the victim. Conscious that the quest for justice is only one part of the journey of healing, nevertheless, I hope that the vindication provided by today's sentencing will in some way bring support and consolation to them, their family and friends." On to the Tyrconnell Tribune this morning. They report how a farm group is set to quiz EU candidates. The Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association is to hold an election forum in Letterkenny, and all EU candidates in the Midlands Northwest constituency are being invited to participate. The meeting in the Clannery Hotel is on Monday, May 27th at 7:30, and all those interested in the future of agriculture are invited to attend. Malcolm Thompson, chair of the ICSA in Donegal, said the forum will give the farming community and other interested parties an opportunity to learn what strategy each party or candidate is proposing for the 5 years ahead as the new parliament is elected. And that's just one of a series of, I think there's one on fishing taking place down in and around Killybegs, and there's other platforms and forums where you'll be able to put questions to candidates, not least here on the 9 till noon show, on Highland Radio more generally. We'll be giving you further and full details of the pre-election local and European debates, which you can listen to and watch here on Highland. We're hoping to speak to every candidate. All will be invited. It's just a matter of whether they can fit us in or accept those invites. The Derry News this morning. Derry and Strabane District Council is to write to the Department of Communities seeking clarification on its anti-poverty strategy. The issue was discussed at a meeting of the Council's Governance and Strategic Planning Committee in the Guild Hall on Tuesday afternoon. At the meeting, councillors discussed the department's hardship fund, which was made available to provide non-recurrent financial support to the most vulnerable. On to the Nationals now, and an interesting survey from the ESRI on our attitudes. I suppose they are our attitudes to climate change and what have you, what we are prepared or not prepared to do. And half of us will not change our food or travel habits to fight climate change. What do you think of that figure? Is that about right? Are you inclined to? I think what happens is those who maybe are of the view that, well, why should I maybe more inclined to contact us or text us? But if you are changing how you eat and how you travel, I'd love to hear those stories as well, because at least half of you are inclined to do so. But reading on here, half of Irish adults will not change what they eat or how much they drive to help combat climate change, new research suggests. Scientists said the study warns that the government must come clean with the public about the high emissions costs of eating meat, while also dramatically improving public transport options. But I can't, I drove to work this morning, and I can't imagine a transport network ever being put in place that would get me to and from work at the times that I needed. That's what rural transport is, or that's what public transport is, isn't it? And I wonder how many of you listening in the office today or on the way to the office realistically could ever consider having a public transport system here in the Northwest that would get you to and from work appropriately. In other words, that you'd have less reliance on a car. So sometimes these articles, I don't think they talk to me, and maybe you there are a lot of you feel the same. But the study from the SRI reveals almost half of people, 47%, see no need to cut down on meat, while nearly a third have no intention of using their car less, and a quarter say they cannot do so. In terms of, like, I've never considered the consumption of meat in a climate crisis situation, if I'm completely honest with you. I just simply haven't. So I would probably want to be one of the don't knows there, because I haven't given it any consideration. The findings appear to contradict, or they appear contradictory within them, since studies repeatedly show the majority of the Irish public are very aware of and are worried about climate change. Again, though, I'm starting to lose faith in a lot of these studies because they often seem to fit a narrative. Trinity students, they were protesting over the college's dealings with Israel, the ties that they have or had, as it turns out, with Israel. The Irish Times reports that students, protesters, are to end their encampment at Trinity College Dublin over the institution's ties to Israel following talks with university management. The campus in Dublin city centre, which hosts the Book of Kells, has been closed to the public since Friday night when students erected tents near the tourist attraction in protest against the university's ties to Israel. Trinity College Dublin said last evening that plans were being put in place to return to normal university business for staff, students and members of the public. As part of the deal with students, the university has confirmed plans announced last week to fully divest from three Israeli companies in which it held investments as part of its endowment fund. So a victory for students, or backing down too quickly to students, it depends on your point of view. We're going to be talking about this in a little more detail shortly. It's on the front of the Irish Daily Mail. Women standing in the upcoming elections are being advised by Gardaí to avoid the dark, canvass in pairs and turn off all social media comments. That's the advice being given to women standing for election. Two support groups for female election candidates, Women for Election and See Her Elected, have come together with the Gardaí to issue the new safety guidance, which includes instructions on how to report instances. We'll be speaking to reps from Women for Election shortly on the show. 086 60 25,000 if you want to get involved in that conversation. The front of the Farmers Journal, TB trends worsen on farms. TB herd incidence has exceeded 5% for the first time in over a decade as the disease continues to worsen on farms. The Minister for Agriculture this week rolled back on criticism he levelled at farm organisations' commitment to TB controls. Minister McConnell Logue had suggested that progress on TB was stalled due to a lack of stakeholder engagement in combating transmission between cattle. He stated that without addressing cattle-to-cattle spread, current TB levels would not fall. The minister has since softened his stance on farm organisations' engagement with TB, stating to the Irish Farmers Journal that his earlier comments used incorrect language on the work of the TB forum. There you go. Right, there was an inevitability as it relates to the conversation about vaping. Up until now, it has been seen, or was seen, well, not until now, in the beginning, it was seen as a very useful, effective means to quit smoking. What we have seen, of course, now is that there's you know, hundreds of tens, probably hundreds of thousands of younger people. Every other person in a pub now is vaping, it seems, of a certain age. They've never smoked a cigarette in their life. And because vaping is relatively young, there is no evidence really to suggest, or there has been no evidence to suggest, what impact it might have on one's health. But studies are beginning to come out. And according to the Irish Sun today, and it's reported widely, chemicals in flavoured vapes could be highly toxic when heated, new research suggests. The study found 505 hazardous chemicals, 127 of which are acutely toxic, and 153 health hazards are formed through vaping. Researchers used AI to simulate the effects of heating chemicals found in 180 flavours. The scientists suggest their approach may help to reveal the long-term health risks of vaping in advance of clinical disease emerging. Liquid flavours in e-cigarettes is heated to high temperature so that it forms vapour, which is then inhaled. The original source for the flavourings comes from the food industry, where they are safe, but they were not intended on being heated to high temperatures and inhaled, the study suggests. The study was authored by Donald O'Shea and others. They wrote, the aerosols produced by e-cigarettes vaping contain immensely complex, uncharacterized mixtures of certain products that I can't pronounce, the health implications of which are yet mostly unidentified, but they are of the view that they are going to be, or will be found to be, eventually cancer-causing and damaging to the respiratory system at a level that we're not fully aware of just at the moment. How he's getting on with the recycling machines. I think some people have started to adapt now, and they have a little hidey hole in the house where they're storing the plastic bottles and cans. And I think you'd have to put 100 odd in to get 11.50 back, is that it? But for some people, that's a satisfactory return. That's if the machines are working and aren't being rejected. Reverse vending machines reject 20% of recyclable containers brought back to stores under the return scheme. The machines were spitting out more than half of the bottles and cans inserted by consumers at the beginning of the scheme, and acceptance dipped as low as 35% during the second week of February. However, figures provided by the operator to Minister of State Oisin Smith show 80% of containers were being accepted by the machines at the end of March. In an email to Mr. Smith, Return CEO Kieran Foley said vending machine suppliers were blaming consumers getting their fingers in the way for the majority of rejections. So it's not the machines' fault, it's our fault, but a 20% rejection rate there. And did you see on the news last night this portal to New York? How long is it going to last? I haven't a clue, but I don't think it's going to be lasting very, very long. I've already seen videos of Gardaí having to remove people from it. It seems like a nice idea, and maybe in the 1960s or something, it would have been very innocent and useful. But a newly unveiled public art sculpture is aiming to bring people together in a visual bridge between Dublin and New York. The two iconic cities are now linked in a groundbreaking portal installation in real time. Dublin City Council yesterday delivered the sculpture called The Portal as part of its designation as the European Capital of Smart Tourism 2024. And it's really two webcams, one on a street in New York, one on a street in Dublin. There's a big circular screen. You look into the screen, you see New York and people standing in front of their screen, and they look back and they see the reverse. And obviously families are connecting with each other and stuff. Presumably they could do it at home on Zoom or WhatsApp. But anyway, it's nice, but it's just going to be abused left, right and centre. And as I say, people are going to be using it for protests and every other thing. And I just wonder how long it's intended to be there. But more importantly, how long it might last. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Already early on to us by phone. Greg, I got a leaflet in the door yesterday asking me to vote my number one vote for a person. Now, for the life of me, I can't understand why I'd give this person a vote when they already have 8 jobs listed in their bio. These jobs, one which is 9 to 5, means they'll be taking time out of the job to attend council meetings, or would many of them be missed because of the day job? When I vote, I look to a person's time to do it and ability to do it. I'd like my councillor to be fully committed to their seat. I'm not sure of the breakdown of how many are full-time councillors, but many of them have jobs. And I suppose if you are running for council, you're going to have to speak to your employer and see will they be able to accommodate your time. But that's this is democracy in action. That's exactly what it's all about. You've looked at the leaflet. You said, I don't think you have the time for this, and your vote will go elsewhere. And that's, as I say, democracy in action. So as we read on the front of the Irish Daily Mail and in other papers earlier today, women standing in the upcoming elections are being advised by Gardaí to avoid the dark, canvas in Paris and turn off all social media comments. Two support groups for female election candidates, Women for Election and See Her Elected, have come together with the Gardaí to issue the new safety guidance, which includes instructions on how to report instances. Katie Deegan is a with communications at Women for Election, joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Katie.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. Quite depressing, isn't it, that this is where we're at now?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the ideal situation that we even have to consider doing something like this type of document. But I suppose there's no benefit in ignoring the reality of what women are facing when they are putting themselves forward for election. Now, I would like to point out that there are plenty of women who are having lovely, pleasant interactions on the doors.
I'd say the majority are.
The majority are, yeah. Exactly. But, you know, one case of abuse of a woman candidate is one too many, in our opinion.
What reports are you getting back, if any, from women out on the doorstep? I mean, obviously, as we've recognised, the majority are, you know, positive, probably challenging because, you know, people are concerned about lots of things. But I suppose the more unsavoury stuff that you wouldn't expect, what are you hearing from the doorsteps?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's definitely a mixture. Some women are saying that they're almost anticipating a negative door and they're not getting it. So they're relieved in that sense. But yeah, of course, challenging, you know, there's lots of issues that people are facing in Ireland at the moment. But I suppose, you know, there is an awful lot of, particularly on social media, negative comments. Women disproportionately will experience abuse more than men. The abuse is different. It's more personal. It's sexualized. And, you know, women are facing this every day on their some women are facing this every day on their campaign trail. And we wanted to do something constructive and proactive to help women to deal with it, to maybe prevent some of it if possible or where possible. And that's why we teamed up with See Her Elected and on Garda Síochána to try and give some advice and help to the women that needed it.
The only issue I would have with this is that, and this is with the candidates' success rates in mind, regardless of gender, is that I don't think this is going to work very well for them, in that if you switch off comments on social media, you seem to be preaching, you seem to be not engaging with people. The abuse will come in quote tweets in any case. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I mean, if it were me and a female candidate come to me and says, well, what do you think about this element of it? I would say, I would probably try and maybe discuss how to disregard the comments rather than switch off comments, because I really think that's not going to work very well when others will have the advantage of, in the first instance, potentially being male, but also seem to be engaging and not coming across as preachy.
No, absolutely. And I suppose that's where organisations like ours and See Her Elected come in, to help with that support piece and that resilience piece when it comes to what women are facing on the campaign trail. And I would also say that there is a key role in all of this of social media companies to take the responsibility to make sure that, you know, this abuse isn't being amplified. You know, when accounts are blocked, reported, that those things are taken seriously by social media companies and dealt with accordingly. So I think, you know, there is definitely a responsibility there that we would like to see, you know, taken on by the social media companies. And then there's also the support piece. So I would say to anybody listening who is running or is a canvasser who's experienced anything negative or upsetting, to contact either ourselves or See Her Elected, because we are there to help, and as are the guards.
And, you know, there's a thing on that can happen to you on social media as well. It's called being ratioed, whereby you could get someone who says something particularly negative, you know, and maybe that person, their views can be drowned out if called out. Do you know what I mean? And might discourage them. But that being said, you see, and I don't understand the mindset of there's an awful lot of misogyny and people that seem to get some sort of a kick from abuse. I don't know who these people are. I don't know where they get off on it. And they're often anonymous, but I do think that, you know, they could be ratioed on this if people call it out. In other words, I think there's a wider responsibility here with social media users.
And absolutely. And look, I think at the end of the day, we don't want to give to tell anybody to amplify the negativity. So sometimes when people retweet negative comments to say this is terrible, although you mean well, you are amplifying the negative message. So what we would in turn say that if you see those things, maybe private message the candidate with your level of support, or amplify a positive message on their post. So say, you know, commenting something pleasant, quote retweeting something pleasant, or sharing something pleasant, rather than sharing the negative thing that was said. And I think it's also really important to acknowledge the fact that you're right. A lot of the people who are commenting horrendous things online tend to be anonymous. Sometimes their account's not even based in Ireland. And there's probably one person with about 20 different accounts. So it tends to seem like there's a lot more people saying things than there really are. And I think it's just really important that women candidates mind themselves, their campaign teams mind themselves, and they report things to the social media companies, keep documentation and screenshots of stuff. And if it goes beyond, you know, what is just a mean tweet and it is something threatening or awful, that they report to the guards.
Mm. Yeah, okay. But I mean, we've seen, particularly under Elon Musk, X really does not respond at all, even to high profile accounts. And even some accounts are protected. They have there's a hierarchy that they can actually get away with even more. Also, to I think X is the worst of it, but I just want to go back to what you said about external influences. And there's been studies, and it's very easy to find out now. And I think the general public are aware and should be aware that for some reason there is organised outside of Ireland involvement in our own social issues here. The majority of interactions in some cases are coming from outside the country. I don't think anyone particularly wants that, you know. And also too, You can have a debate and challenge someone and take issue with them without referencing their gender or their looks or what have you. You know, I think if you are going at someone on based on their appearance or their gender, really, it means you don't have a constructive argument to challenge what they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's key here is that civil debate is key to our democracy. And I don't think anybody wants to take that away. We have to be able to agree and disagree in a respectful manner in order to be able to progress our democracy and to see change within our institutions, our laws, you know, our society. But I think there is a very clear line, and it's not ambiguous at all, to when that becomes inappropriate and just unacceptable. And I think that is where we see her elected, the guards and Women for Election will step in. I also think it's incredibly important to acknowledge that more women in politics will change this culture. You know, we need a critical mass of women in our democracy. Like currently right now on Donegal County Council, there are 3 out of 37 women on the council. You know, we've 25% across the country. It's not reflective of the society in which our democracy is trying to represent, and we need to change that.
But so, the thing too is, you see, Katie, and this is why I'd worry for female candidates in the election with this type of story, because I actually don't feel the concerns are reflective of broader society. The majority of people listening to us now aren't on X or don't use X. They might have an account, they simply don't use X, right? Mm-hmm. And they live in a world where they are respectful. That they feel a woman should feel safe to be able to walk around, and they believe that she is, and that there's no need necessarily for women to walk around in pairs because there's not this ever-present threat to them. My concern is that, be consciously or subconsciously, Katie, this news cycle on this story is actually going to disadvantage women, not just in the social media space, but also as if to call out that, you know, no woman is safe in this country because every man's out to get them. Do you get where I'm coming from? And I'm hoping, being careful with my language, I get why it's happening. I just think there might be a man candidate now and a woman candidate on a ballot paper, and people go, well, this must be a man's job.
Well, it's definitely not a man's job, because what we have
I don't believe that, but you know.
Well, what we have seen is that there are a record number of women running this year. There's more women candidates across Ireland than ever before, which shows the appetite of women to see change within their democracy, to see representation of their lives and their experiences and their values. And I think that that's really important. Like, we are seeing this. And this is without quotas. We don't have gender quotas at local elections. So we can't even give credit to anything or any other influence. It is purely women wanting to put themselves forward. These women have taken the brave step. And anybody who puts themselves on the paper, on the ballot paper, it's an amazing choice to have made.
Yeah.
We've seen record-breaking numbers of women putting themselves forward because they want to see a different type of democracy within their communities. Mm-hmm. And that has to be commended, I think.
Yeah, and just one final question. It's not in any way to challenge that this doesn't happen or anything. I just want to get through all the questions, really, Katie. Just to be clear, is this Women for Election, see her elected, the Gardaí being proactive, or is this based off data? In other words, women are feeling unsafe walking in the streets. Women are being abused either face-to-face or online based on their gender, their appearance, or what have you. Do you know what I'm saying? So is this being proactive or is this actually reactive because the problems are genuinely there and being seen?
I mean, don't get me wrong. Misogyny has been in our society for centuries. So this is not a new thing for women in Ireland. However, what we are experiencing is definitely more women either being vocal about the abuse that they're experiencing and the possible increase of, especially with social media, that amplifies this abuse. However, I will say that we, Women for Election and See Her Elected on Garda Síochána, want to make sure that we're equipping women with the tools to keep themselves safe. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if it was 100 women or just one woman. There is a, with just one woman is enough to justify doing this piece of work. And I think it's really important.
And fellas will get it too. Don't get me wrong, but they're not being told to turn off comments. They're not being told to canvass in pairs and they're not being told to not go out at night. Do you know what I mean, Katie?
Well, no, I totally get that. But I do think most candidates will be told by either their party organizer or, you know, campaign managers to say, you know, after a certain, you know, hour, probably shouldn't go out. You know, you should probably turn off your comments on X because abuse is across the political spectrum. Mm. However, as Women for Election, we're specifically targeting the abuse that women are experiencing because it does tend to be disproportionately more and sexualized and more personalized abuse.
Okay.
I will just say, just before you go, Greg, is that we do currently are recruiting canvassers to help women with their campaigns across the country. So you can go to womenforelection.ie and join the Canvas for Women. And we'll provide you with all the tools to be able to knock on doors, do social media or put up posters. So if you want to see more women elected in your community, go to womenforelection.ie and join the Canvas for Women.
All right. And just to be clear, listen, we're allies here on the show. We speak regularly to Women for Election and particularly See Her Elected. It's just you want something to be positive but not counterintuitive. Do you know what I mean? And I just thought interesting to tease all that out with you. Katie, and no better person than yourself to bat away where needed be. All right. Thanks very much indeed. Take care of yourself.
Thanks.
All right. Katie Deegan there, communications at Women for Election. What do you think about that? 086 60 25,000. And particularly, I think, if you're a female candidate or supporting a female candidate, do you think this is a good move? Do you think it might be counterintuitive? And that sounds crazy because I'm talking about the protection of people being safe and all out there, but we're also talking about people's chances of election and so on and so forth. A bit of a conversation sparked on social media on Holy Communions, and the question was put to our friends there. How have First Holy Communions changed since you made yours? It's off the back of a listener texting in to say that they received 10 shillings as part of their communion money, which works out at around 50 cents in today's money. Communions are an expensive time with outfits for children, a meal and giving them a monetary gift. How much do you think is acceptable to give a child for celebrating their communion? Should children be allowed to make their communion even if they don't regularly go to mass? Some of the questions that were posed by a listener. Sharon on Facebook said, I made my communion in 1979. You went to your grandparents' house and some of your aunties and uncles and wore your dress for several weeks after going to Sunday Mass. Any money you got stayed with your parents and you got to pick a gift at a reasonable cost. I don't remember bringing in too much for my communion. I do remember me not having it, if that makes sense. So I think me and Sharon are on the same page there. Breda believes it's out of control. I remember my communion and confirmation was taken for dinner to a small family hotel. Had never been for dinner in a hotel before, and that was such a treat. That was it, and I fondly remember it 42 years ago. Now it's who's better than everyone else, biggest dress, tan, makeup, kids, limo, and putting pressure on families. I will have a boy for communion in a couple of years, and no way am I going to be under pressure to keep up with the Joneses. Sheila is of the opinion that they should make their Holy Communion and confirmation in their school uniforms, so they're all the same. I believe confirmations often are in school uniforms, aren't they? Marie says, I know someone who had a spray tan for the family and a stretch limo. Is that in the Bible? Just wondering. I don't think so. I haven't seen it, Marie. Finally, for now, Imelda says, for me, it's ridiculous. If anyone reads the Bible, there's no mention of communions or confirmations. Everyone trying to outdo the other in clothes and parties. It's not fair on people who cannot afford this. Jesus is Jesus. No religion and rituals. He saved and born again, we're told in God's word, the Bible. Have you a view on that? Again, let us know. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Shall I take one more before we go to a break? It's an email, and it's on about the Eurovision. Very divisive. One second, I have to take a break, Caroline. Hi, Caroline. Can you ask Greg to keep his opinions to himself with regards to the Irish artist Bambi Thug and her win on the Eurovision show? It's impossible enough to make anything of yourself in this country without the country's radio shows itself saying they wouldn't recommend it to kids and two way out there, when this is a win for Ireland and a lot better than a Dublin turkey called Dustin. This is Ireland, Lady Gaga, and you should be behind Bambi and her push for people who may not feel like they belong in today's gender-defined roles. Remember Madonna's song, Like a Prayer, was banned at the time. I do indeed, the video was banned. And now in a normal song, not raising a hair. So this too will be seen as the hit and the show it is as time goes on. A little less hate and low opinions, Greg, for our artists, and a bit more praise to make amends. Play the song on your show. Thank you. Again, sometimes I wonder, Brendan, thanks for that. And I do appreciate all feedback, and I don't bury it. I read it out because that's just the style here, that we want people to have all their voices. The whole show, depending on the age of your children and the type of your children, the whole show is not really family entertainment anymore. There's lots of hip thrusting, lots of all this kind of stuff, loads of guys or girls in the shower, see-through outfits. Every parent is perfectly entitled to make their own decision. I just said that I don't really see it anymore as family entertainment. That being said, I sat and watched it, and I'm very pleased Bambi Thug got through, and I'll probably, most likely, watch it on Saturday and wish that Ireland wins. I don't know where you came from, me thinking being critical and all that type of stuff. But as I say, I really respect all contact, even if it might seem to be critical of me or the show. It's all welcome. And as I say, it all helps in guiding the programme. OK, we're going to take a quick break. Our next guest will join us in studio very shortly. Stay where you are. We are joined in studio by Orla Callahan, Chair of Letterkenny Darkness into Light. Orla, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you for having me on.
Right, OK, so Darkness into Light takes place this weekend. And I'll tell you, by the way, for those of you listening around Donegal, later on in the interview, I'm going to run through all the locations where they're starting. So if you feel motivated through the course of this conversation, stay tuned, because I'll give you a full list of what's happening across Donegal. So what's happening and when, generally speaking?
Okay, well, at 4:15 on Saturday morning, this weekend.
The early hours of Saturday morning.
Early hours,
right, so
of
we're
Saturday
gonna get good
morning.
Weather then. Okay, that's
we're
good.
Going to get good weather. At 4:15, hundreds and thousands of people in Ireland will take to the streets of Ireland and walk from darkness into light. Which sends a great message of hope for those who are suffering.
And this is to support Pieta House,
yeah, which is a free service, counselling service for people who have suicide ideations, who are thinking of self-harming, or who have been bereaved by suicide.
Mm-hmm. And there's sort of a couple of strands to this, isn't there, in that I suppose it's doing something when you might ordinarily be in bed and to help raise money for Pieta, but also to, you know, I would say a lot of people maybe who felt they had needed to avail of Pieta's services, or for those who have lost someone to suicide, lots of people do it for many different reasons.
Absolutely. And even people who know somebody who may be even just suffering with their mental health.
Yeah.
And everybody knows somebody who is either suffering from their mental health or who has, unfortunately, you know, taken their life by suicide or who might be self-harming. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't know somebody. So for all those reasons, everybody gets out mm-hmm. and supports the walk.
And you yourself have used the services of
Get Ahead. I used the service a number of years ago.
As much as you want to say or don't say, but maybe just to, in however you want to phrase it and whatever you want to say, more to talk about how it can help and the difference it makes, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Or I don't want to put you in an awkward position.
No, absolutely, Greg, and I don't mind, because that's the whole message around mental health, isn't it? To talk about it and not to bottle it up and to hide it, you know, to talk to somebody about it. And that's what I did. You know, a number of years ago, I was having suicidal ideations. I was going through a really rough time. At that particular time, it was just coming out of COVID. We were still in lockdown. You know, there wasn't that many people to talk to. There was still that isolation. And I knew of Pieta, and I used their free phone number.
Were you reluctant in the first instance to give
them
a call?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know, you feel like, I don't know. I suppose you just, it's hard, you know, to make that initial call to reach out for somebody and say that you're suffering and that you need help.
Because the mind can work against us, can't we?
Oh, absolutely, the mind can, absolutely. And it was a difficult time. But, you know, I had two children, I had two beautiful daughters, and, you know, I wanted to be there for them. I loved them so much, and my family and my friends. And I just didn't want to be suffering anymore. I didn't want that pain anymore.
So talk us through then the process. So you picked up the phone.
I picked up the phone. I got the courage to pick up the phone. I didn't know what to expect, actually, Greg. I know some people might go, the website actually has a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
But I was quite naive. I just knew that Pieta was there to help and that was a free service. And I picked up the phone and I got a lovely woman at the end of the phone, and she was really, really nice. And she spoke to me and she talked and she listened. And
at that point, just with that initial conversation, did things almost start feeling a little better once that you had opened up and spoke to another person?
The relief of reaching out to somebody and saying that you needed help, mm-hmm. straight away, that lifts the burden off your shoulders.
Wow.
It was huge relief.
Yeah,
I mean, I totally felt enlightened just coming off that phone and knowing that I was going to get help.
Yeah.
And I felt that, you know, I felt that they really wanted to help me as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt that they were really listening, and I felt I was going to get the support that I needed.
And they would, until such time as a counsellor was available, I don't know mm-hmm. how long it would have taken in your case, but it wasn't just, they didn't leave you hanging at that point.
Absolutely not, Greg. What they do is they do an assessment then. They rang me back and they did an assessment. And then I did have to wait. Now, I can't remember how long, but I know I didn't have to wait long. But what they did was they did do follow-up phone calls and they did give me a phone number for somebody I could reach out to if I needed to in the meantime. So, and that was good, because obviously, you know, you could have that initial phone call and mm-hmm. then nobody gets back mm-hmm. to you and mm-hmm. you feel like you've just been dropped.
Yep.
And let down.
Because that's the thing about it is, isn't it? A lot of the time, isn't it? I can feel what it must have felt like when you were able to open up and feel somewhat, you know, relieved of that pressure initially. Still a long way to go, but it must have, well, I can imagine how that might feel. But when we encourage people to reach out to make that phone call, it's essential. Some people might only make that phone call once, right? It's essential that we have services like this that don't leave you on your own after that initial call, which is really, really important, and great to see that they see the benefit of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you then went through your process with them. Did you do it face to face, on the phone, because we were maybe still under some restrictions? Or
they actually gave me the choice. They said that they could give me, now they said that I might have to wait a wee bit longer for the face to face therapy, or in person therapy, I suppose it's called, or they give me the option of immediate phone calls. So I opted for the phone calls. And I mean, I couldn't say I was a wee bit reluctant, but I suppose I wasn't sure how that would go.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose it was around that COVID time too, mm-hmm. there was that uncomfortableness of meeting people face to face as well.
Because the isolation was what, you know, was part of the cause.
Absolutely.
So obviously then the face-to-face versus phone, that's going to fit into your mental space at that time.
Absolutely. So it was easy to make the, it was easy to talk over the phone. Now, and I've got to say, it was a great service.
Yeah.
I really, I got a lovely, lovely lady. And, you know, I nearly felt like she was my best friend at the end of it.
Yes.
And she was so understanding. And, you know, she helped me. She listened, which was very important. She wasn't judgmental. I felt that she actually had compassion and empathy for you know, my troubles, my, you know, my worries, my concerns. And then she helped me, not only that, but then they actually helped me and they to develop skills then how to cope. And I thought that was very good to manage those difficult thoughts.
Yep. Because it's not a light switch.
Absolutely.
You don't have a bit of counselling and feel fantastic.
No.
You have to work on yourself ongoing. Yeah. And you need those tools, as you say. Yeah.
And that's what she did. And I met that you can have up to 12 free sessions, which is excellent. And, you know, you don't have to give a donation or anything. It's absolutely free. They decide how many sessions you need. I think I got 12. And I met her at a certain time every week. For 50 minutes. And, you know, it was I was looking forward to meeting her. And sometimes I didn't know what I was going to talk about. But, you know, it's a bit like coming here today. But uptight about coming here today. But once you start talking, then it all flows.
Exactly.
And you feel so much better for it.
Well, the anticipation of something is often worse than the event itself.
Yeah,
and that's tied into anxiety and what have you.
Yeah.
Right, so... your experience was such, and it's relatively recent of experiences, was as such that you says, well, you know, I want to give something back here as well. So obviously you feel that this engagement had a very positive impact on your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an amazing service. I mean, in Donegal, they provide in-person service. They provide phone and video therapy service. They have a 24/7, you know, helpline and text service. They have a suicide bereavement liaison officer.
Which is very, very important.
It's very important. That's great. And even something that I didn't know they did, and I think it's great, is they have a community education programme where they go out to the schools and young people and they teach them about resilience. And they award an Amber Flag. It's called an Amber Flag programme. And, you know, apparently in 2023, Piet awarded 14 flags with 1,918 students, young people and adults around the county. And I think that's amazing.
Okay. Now, you're chair of the Letterkenny Darkness into Light. I would imagine it's going to be one of the biggest given the population centre. So I'm going to run through the rest of them, right? So you talk to me about what's happening Friday night, early hours of Saturday morning.
Okay. So the walk starts at 4:15 from Anne Danlon at the ATU. If you're driving, you can park across the road. Anybody comes late then will can come in the back entrance. It'll start at 4:15 sharp. We hope to have some lovely music to set the mood. There'll be a short opening speech and then the walkers will take off. There'll be a few runners. There's usually a few runners. Some people come with their families. There'll be people with disabilities. We had a few wheelchair users last year. Dogs are very welcome as well, as long as they're on a lead. And then the walk is 5 kilometres and it will basically, it's around by the Polestar, the back of the round by the Mount Errigal, back Ballyrain Road, past the back of the ATU, up the Port Road, down by the Old Duns, over by Pierce Road and back in the front of the ATU. And at the when they finish, there is refreshments and Danlon.
Lovely. Everyone's experience and everyone's self is different. For some people, they can feel very strong going into an event like this. And I don't want to use the words, it sounds too extreme, but it can be quite triggering for some as well, even through going through the experience. That's a small amount of people. And I just want to reach them as well and make sure that they look after themselves and hopefully get the positives from this. It is all positive, but I just want to be conscious that for some it might be overwhelming, a small amount when they actually take part, maybe come a little bit soon for them or what have you. So that's in Letterkenny. All of the start times are at 4.15. Mm-hmm. On Arranmore Island, they start at 4.15, and that is from Inid and Krish Abalia. And that's on the island. Ballybofey and Stranola, their start time 4.15. All of them are Finn Valley Centre. Buncrana, they're starting at Skullmora on St. Oran's Road. In Bundoran, they start at the Bundoran Community Centre on the main street there, 4.15 again. The start point for Burton Port is Burton Port Community Centre. In Carindonagh, Spriaga Sport, the Unit 7, there at Super Value, Carndonagh. That's a 4.15 start time again, of course. In Carrick, they get underway at Carrick Community Hall. In Carrigart, they start at the Donegal Boardwalk Resort. That is particularly sensational because you're walking, you know, towards the sea. Donegal Town, St. John Bosco Centre is where things start there. Greencastle again at 4.15, late Friday night, early Saturday morning. It is Saturday morning, but I want to make sure no one turns up a day late. Skull Column Kill, 11 Ballybows in Greencastle. Gwydor, the Gwydor Theatre is the starting point there. Letterkenny, as you heard from our guest Orla, the ATU Donegal. Naren and Portnew, the start location there is the Dolman Eco Centre. Rathmullen, beach car park, nice and simple there. And also Tory Island, they start at the health centre on Tory Island. So it's all this Friday night into Saturday morning, 4.15. You begin your walk in the darkness and you continue your walk and conclude it in the light. For more information, Orla, where should people go?
There's a website. If they just click on Darkness into Light website, okay. It's all there and they can register. It's a bit late now for a T-shirt. You could get a T-shirt, but we will be, anybody who is late registered, and we will have T-shirts on okay. The morning.
And also, folks, if you have organised one of these events, and it's official, of course, and I didn't mention it, please get in touch and we'll spread the word. Orla, thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you,
great
Greg,
to see you doing so
me.
Well.
Thank you.
And I hope that, and I'm sure it will continue for you going forward. That's Orla Callaghan, Callaghan, Chair of the Letterkenny Darkness into Light. Back after the news.